Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. In about 25 minutes, Dr. Bob Weiss joins us to talk about end-of-life issues pertaining to bioethics. In between now and then, we're going to be hearing some audio, stopping and starting occasionally, from NBC Today Show. They're doing a series on mysterious faith today. They talk about the Church of Scientology. And Katie Couric interviewed a representative. This is rare. I think this is genuinely rare. Now, you may have seen interviews with Tom Cruise. He's not actually a representative of Scientology. He's a devotee of Scientology, and he has his own opinions about it. Katie Couric interviews a representative of the Church of Scientology. We're going to be hearing that audio and getting your reaction to it as well. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. In 25 minutes, Dr. Bob Weiss. And then in the third hour, which is actually only about 40 minutes, we're going to be playing Best Soundbite of the Week. You get to choose the Best Soundbite of the Week. That means you call in as we play the audio and vote for what you think is the best one. Doesn't mean you have to like the soundbite. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it. You might just find it intriguing, infuriating, or something you can't stop thinking about. We'll play a couple for you and let you vote in the last 45 minutes of Issues Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You might have seen this if you were around the house for the Today Show, this series on mysterious faiths. The latest, the Church of Scientology. Katie Couric, a little bit later in this audio, will interview a representative of the Church of Scientology. And we begin with Katie Couric.
This morning on day three of our series, Mysterious Faiths, we're uncovering the secrets of Scientology. It's a religion based on the teachings of a deceased science fiction writer, and it counts some of Hollywood's biggest celebrities among its most ardent followers. But the public support has done little to stop the question about Scientology's origins, beliefs, and practices. Here's NBC's Peter Alexander.
Tom Cruise's biggest starring role this summer may not have been in the movie War of the Worlds, but as Scientology's most public spokesman, particularly after this controversial debate about psychiatry on the Today Show.
You don't know the history of psychiatry. I do.
Scientology's media exposure is fueled by star power. John Travolta, wife Kelly Preston, Kirstie Alley, Lisa Marie Presley are all among its celebrities. But most Scientologists are not famous. Take Edith Raveni, a 28-year member of the church.
It gives you a better understanding of who you are, where you came from, how to do things, and how to live a better life.
But is it a true religion? In one sense, yes. The IRS gave the church tax-exempt religious status after years of lawsuits. But detractors say that its pricey methods of training, seen on this church video, are more about mind control and making money than spirituality. So who founded Scientology? The church was the brainchild of a one-time science fiction writer, L. Ron Hubbard, who died in 1986. His 1950 self-help book, Dianetics, is the basis for much of the church's teaching, including a ban on psychiatry and drugs. From a 1966 interview provided by the church, Hubbard addresses the question, what is Scientology's ultimate goal?
It's a finite state known as clear, and that means that the individual has erased what the Freudian said was his basic illness, which is his reactive mind, his unconscious mind is gone, and he is totally alert and totally capable.
The idea, Scientologists say, is to cleanse the spirit, known as the Thetan, of its past psychological traumas, to reach what they call a state of clear. After 28 years, Edith Raveni says she has reached a mysterious level called Operating Thetan 7. She bristles at critics.
I can guarantee you that they have not walked into one of our churches and found out for themselves.
For today, Peter Alexander, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Michael Rinder is a member of the board of directors for the Church of Scientology International. Mr. Rinder, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Katie.
How many Scientologists are there worldwide? Do you have any kind of figure on that?
Well, yeah, there's about 10 million around the world, spread amongst 156 countries with churches, missions, and groups now totaling about 4,200 internationally.
Now, before she goes on to her second question there in this interview from NBC Today Show, part of a series on mysterious faiths, talking about the Church of Scientology, this is an intriguing thing. The thing that intrigues me about it is, did you hear what the woman said at the very end of that little package? The woman who had reached operating Thetan level 7 or 17? She said, the critics haven't come into our churches and seen what we're all about. If they would, they wouldn't criticize us. I'm noticing two things. First of all, how similar that is to the response to critics that that many Christian evangelicals have. Well, if you just came to our church and saw what it was all about, you wouldn't criticize us. And sometimes the critics are criticizing what they have experienced, what they have been through. You know, there are former Scientologists who are calling into question the Church of Scientology. But the other thing I'm noticing is this represents maybe a turning of a page for Scientology. Up to this point, they have been notoriously secretive and notoriously quiet. If you hear from them in the past, kind of the old story goes, if you heard from the Scientologists, it was usually they were serving you a summons. Because they were also a very, at least up until recently, very litigious group. And maybe this is a new phase in their PR. I don't know. I'd love to hear your reaction to this Today Show segment. This morning on the Church of Scientology, our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'll tell you what I know about Scientology. And look, I've read the articles in the books, and they all pretty much say the same thing. You've got people who are trying to rid their psyche, their thetan of engrams, bad experiences, thoughts, attitudes. It's very difficult to define, and they do this through what they call auditing. It may involve some sort of a device, some sort of primitive feedback device. And if you pay enough money, you might get closer to being clear, which is self-actualized. This is why, by the way, Tom Cruise was so adamant in his criticism of psychiatry and psychology and mood-altering pharmaceuticals. Well, because he'd found the answer, and the answer is Scientology, and drugs is not the way to go in his mind, and therapy is not the way to go. He was making a statement of his religious beliefs. All right, back to this interview between Katie Couric and a representative of the Church of Scientology.
When people say to you, explain Scientology sort of in a nutshell, how do you do it? Because I'm not sure I still understand sort of the basic tenets of the religion.
Okay, well, obviously it's a big subject.
Right.
The first principle, or the first thing, is probably what the word itself means, which skio, meaning knowledge, ology, meaning study of, the study of knowledge. Scientology is a way of finding self, or self-realization, finding the answers to life, the answers to spiritual awareness, and it contains practical tools and solutions to everyday living, as well as those big questions of who am I, where do we come from, what are we doing here, and what happens when we die.
If I had just heard that last answer, with the exception of the beginning where he's talking about explaining the kind of the etymology of the word Scientology, be honest with me, could you tell me the difference between that and what the average kind of evangelical church says the purpose of Christianity is? Well, the purpose of Christianity is to kind of discover who you are, what you're supposed to be doing, the purpose for your life. And we have practical tools and methods for helping you sort this all out. There are a lot of Christians who go to church for that very reason. They think they're going to church so they can get practical tools and methods for kind of sorting out their purpose, their direction in life. Pretty sad day when Christianity starts sounding like Scientology. And one would wonder, I mean, if Scientology works, and those who really believe it, and they really, really believe it, those who really believe it say it does work. If it works better than going to church every Sunday, singing a lot of songs, and hearing some preacher give you practical tips for how to live your life, who knows? There might be people willing to give Scientology a crack. I want to hear from you, your reaction to this Today Show segment from this morning on Scientology, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
And what does happen when you die if you're a Scientologist?
Well, We believe that man is a spiritual being. That's a fundamental principle of Scientology, is that man is a spiritual being. He has a body. He uses a mind to direct the activities of his body. That he has lived many lifetimes and is an eternal spirit. And the object of Scientology is to attain a full understanding of oneself, a realization of one's innate spiritual nature.
And that's Thetan or whatever?
That's in Scientology, the individual, the spiritual being is called a Thetan. It is literally just a word that is used to differentiate it from other terms such as soul, because it has a slightly different meaning in Scientology.
So it's sort of to reach the self-actualization in the most sort of complete way?
That's exactly right.
Do Scientologists believe in God?
Absolutely.
Do they worship God in a traditional way as a higher power, or is the highest power the self?
No. I'll try and explain this. Scientologists have a very fundamental belief in God. There are eight divisions or compartments of life, eight urges towards survival. Those urges range from number one, which is the urge towards existence as the individual, yourself, then procreation and family, then group, then mankind, then all living things, then all things of the material universe, then spirituality, and then ultimately the supreme being or creator. And when one has reached an understanding across all of those dynamics, mm-hmm. up through seven, then one comes to a full understanding of the creator or God.
Ooh, this is... I've never heard this before. I mean, I'm actually learning something about Scientology. Are you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, let me just comment on this. Did you hear anything fishy in there? He said, Scientology believes that man is a spirit. He is a spiritual being and he has a body. And the goal of Scientology is to figure out, to determine and to come to a full knowledge of yourself as a spiritual being. Tell me how that differs. Really, anybody, tell me that how that differs from Christianity's view of man and the purpose of Christianity. I mean, you heard it from the Scientologist himself. The goal of Scientology is to come to a better knowledge of who you are as a spiritual being. The spirit, the Thetan, according to Scientology, is the real you. You know, I've heard Christians say, you know, I'm a spiritual being and my spirit is the real me. Is that true? Is that what the Bible teaches? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, you can look at Scientology and say, well, I've heard about it and I know it's some kind of a very expensive cult. But when you examine its teachings, you have to be able to tell the difference between it and what you believe as a Christian. When they train Secret Servicemen to recognize counterfeits in money, counterfeit currency, they do not train them by showing them examples, a million examples, of how you can counterfeit a $100 bill. They train them to recognize the counterfeit by schooling them in what the real McCoy looks like. You got to know, as a Christian, what you believe. Can you tell the difference? Back to this interview between Katie Couric and the representative of the Church of Scientology.
I know that, according to my research, L. Ron Hubbard, the father of Scientology, claimed that humans are immortal spiritual beings composed of body, mind, and spirit. But he also claimed that 75 million years ago, an evil galactic ruler named Xenu killed billions of his people by sending them to Earth in space planes. You can understand why some people might feel this is, at best, pretty unconventional, and I guess at worst, just plain out there, right?
I can understand that, certainly, Katie. That just has no basis in reality. This is one of those things that gets spread around, one of those old stories
so
that gets
never,
run
he never
around.
Wrote about that?
No, not in those terms. There is an alteration and twisting of things, and the real point about Scientology is that You can find out what Scientology is by going into any church, by reading any one of these books, getting them. We try and make them as available as possible so that people can see what Scientology is. You won't find anything like that in any of these materials at all.
Let me.
Before she goes on with her next question, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, it is true that L. Ron Hubbard wrote fictional accounts. Now, this is what the Church of Scientology is saying. Bear in mind that even the Church of Scientology tells its own members, you don't even really know what Scientology is until you reach a sufficient level of clear. So we don't know. It depends on, I guess, how clear this representative of Scientology is. If he's clear enough to really know what it's all about. I mean, it may be that when you get completely clear, they bring you in and they tell you, yes, it really is about, you know, 100 million years ago people being sent to Earth on space planes. We don't know that. It's hard to tell. Truth from fiction. Joe calls from West Bend, Wisconsin. Joe, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. When you started this topic, I quickly pulled out a paper that was done in our pastor's winkle by another pastor in our circuit on this topic, and he had gotten some quotes because apparently, while their books are kind of the hook you, it's the audio tapes that are the big things that you have to get, and to get those, I'm under the impression it's $1,000 a pop to be able to hear these presentations. But he was able to get a couple of quotes, and this one on the Antichrist is rather interesting. I thought I would share it with you. This is L. Ron Hubbard speaking. No doubt you're familiar with the Revelations, which is obviously the book of Revelation, section of the Bible where various events are predicted. Also mentioned is a brief period of time in which the arch enemy of Christ, referred to as the Antichrist, will reign in his and his opinions will have sway. This Antichrist represents the forces of Lucifer, literally the light bearer or light bringer. Lucifer, being a mythical representation of the forces of element, my mission could be said to fulfill the biblical promise represented by this brief Antichrist period. L. Ron Hubbard, student briefing, OT 8, Series 1. That was the quote that was given to us on an understanding of their view of the Antichrist.
Now, how do you read that, Joe? What do you read Hubbard saying?
He basically blatantly says he's the Antichrist.
Interesting. Thank you very much.
He really doesn't have a problem with saying that he's the Antichrist or an Antichrist in his teachings.
Thank you, Joe. Wow, I hadn't heard that one. See, you just learn new things every day, especially when it comes to Scientology. Well, two things. He may be right and he may be wrong. Not everyone who claims to be the Antichrist would necessarily be, but there is no doubt about it. Scientology is anti-Christian. It sets up something instead of Christ. All right, back to Katie Couric and the Church of Scientology.
Let me ask you about the celebrity centers. Why do you have centers specifically catering to celebrities rather than non-celebrities?
Because there is a big community of artists, particularly in Los Angeles, who are Scientologists. There are many churches of Scientology in the Los Angeles area.
Are they treated differently than non-celebrities in any way?
No. They're Scientologists just like anybody else, and they find in Scientology the same thing that other people find in Scientology.
Let me ask you more about the controversy. Obviously, Tom Cruise was on this program this summer. I'm sure you're well aware of that. And during the interview, he was very passionate about psychiatry and the fact that there is really no proof of a chemical brain imbalance, that he doesn't think antidepressants should be used. He doesn't believe in psychiatry in general. What is the basis for all that anti-psychiatric beliefs that are inherent in the Church of Scientology?
Well, the basis for it, it's not a belief, Katie. It's the fact that the practices that are used by psychiatrists damage people. They harm them.
And what about all the people, that they help? Obviously, I think the medical community would say there are a lot of people who are helped. Even if you accept the possibility that prescription drugs are overprescribed or that there's not enough therapy. Don't you think that there are many, many cases where it can be very helpful to people?
I think that people don't understand what the side effects of these drugs are. They don't understand that psychiatrists do not have an understanding of what is the cause of the, quote, illnesses that they're treating. They invent these diseases literally by sitting around and voting on them so that then a new drug can be developed in order to address the disease.
A little bit like what we heard from Tom Cruise, almost sounds like psychiatry and psychology is a big conspiracy to sell us drugs. You can believe that or not. The Scientologist has an interest, by the way, in that argument because they won't be selling you drugs. They will be selling you auditing sessions. I wonder if Blue Cross Blue Shield covers auditing sessions. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Kathy, who calls from her car. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. It seems like the guy's a little bit crazy to me, but that's beside the point. I heard you say something about the spirit. And just a quick question so I can understand where you're coming from. So I would like to tell you what I believe about the spirit of man. Do you believe that man is a spirit?
I believe man is a spirit and body.
Okay. And soul?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you believe that man is three parts? Spirit, body, and soul.
Scripture speaks two different ways. It speaks about man as a body and a soul, or a body, soul, and spirit. Yeah.
And you believe that the soul is the mind, the will, and the intellect?
Soul is the, at least according to the scripture, the soul is the life of a man.
The way a man thinketh, or the way he approaches life. Which I believe the soul is alive in man, and that's the evil part of man, because his mind and his will and his intellect basically thinks on evil, unless his spirit is born again. And then Christ, the Lord, comes to move in and gives us help to overcome the soulish realm and to think on the things of Christ rather than the things that we live and walk in every day. We set our mind on things above.
Kathy, before I let you go, what role does the body play in there? Is a man essentially a spirit trapped in a body?
Actually, he's dead. Man has no spiritual life whatsoever unless it is energized by God, the miracle of God himself.
All right, Kathy, thank you. Our time is running out here as we go toward this break. You know, the question I'd asked the representative of Scientology said that we are eternal, immortal spirits and a body. But the body's not the important part for Scientology. The real you is the spirit. And I ask the question, is that what Scripture teaches? There are many Christians who would say, oh yeah, that's what we believe. We're really spiritual beings. The real us is our spirits. Our bodies are just kind of, well, maybe a prison house for the spirit, or maybe just a temporary dwelling, or someplace we're trapped. Is that what the Bible teaches? That's what Scientology teaches, but the Bible? We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Historical theology is not just a bunch of names and dates and fact. It's the study of Christ being faithful to his promises.
Dr. Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the importance of historical theology.
Historical theology is the study of theology over the course of time, just like the title says, theology over the course of time. But that can lead some to think that this is a dry, kind of an abstract endeavor, when in fact what we're talking about with historical theology is the faithful confession ongoing through the church by people that Christ has called, seeing him fulfill the promise that he will never leave the church orphaned or forsaken.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit their website, www.ctsfw.edu.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Next Tuesday, the PBS program Frontline will air an examination of the conflict between the pro-life and pro-abortion movements in the South. The hour-long feature is called The Last Abortion Clinic, taking its name, at least in part, from the fact that there is now only one abortion clinic in all of Mississippi. Terry Phillips takes a look at the program.
The producers say the message is that Roe v. Wade is becoming irrelevant because of state laws regulating abortion. Rainey Aronson produced and wrote The Last Abortion Clinic for Frontline.
I ended up chronicling and looking at the pro-life movement strategy and their success.
The state wearing the pro-life crown of success is Mississippi. Terry Herring, president of Pro-Life Mississippi, was interviewed extensively for the film.
We have passed 15 pro-life laws in Mississippi. But as you know, even those are very minimal.
But minimal restrictions have reduced abortion clinics operating in the state from 7 to 1. Herring sees the conflict as David versus Goliath.
I think right now the pro-life movement has the rock in the sling. And I think that the head of the giant is Roe v. Wade.
Producer Aronson feels The Last Abortion Clinic is balanced, but features so much on pro-life success that it could appear to be a warning.
If you're pro-choice, you could look at this film in that way and think, oh my goodness, I should do something.
Pro-Life, Americans United for Life, advised Mississippi allies on their involvement in the program. AUL's Dan McConkie.
We definitely want people to see it. This story, I think, really will help open people's eyes to show what different, you know, what other things can be done.
The Last Abortion Clinic airs on PBS television next Tuesday. For Family News and Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
20 minutes of the program examined what is being called the first major abortion case to be considered by the Supreme Court in 5 years, and that is a New Hampshire parental notification law. This is Family News in Focus.
Hi, Grandma. Hi, Grandpa. You know, here at AM850KFUO, we know you look into the faces of your precious grandchildren and you wonder about their futures. You wonder if the faith that was delivered to you will be preserved for them. You know the Christian truth is under attack. Rest assured that AM850KFUO will work every day to proclaim that pure truth of the gospel to your generation and theirs. There really is something to be said for the truth. AM850KFUO, serving you and the rest of the world. If you've ever wondered about the issues that were the basis for agreement and disagreement during the Reformation, we have a book for you. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is titled Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, a reader's edition of the Book of Concord. You can find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 or look for the cover of Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions on our website, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We still got a few minutes of that NBC Today Show special, part of their series on Mysterious Faith, and they're talking about the Church of Scientology. We'll wrap up that audio and some comments, your comments as well, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And then for the remainder of this second hour, Dr. Bob Weiss will be our guest. We'll talk about end-of-life bioethics issues. He joins us here in Studio A. LCMS World Relief underwrites Issues Etc. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, a marriage made in heaven, because our Christ-centered and cross-focused approach fits very nicely with their Christ-centered, cross-focused approach. They help people who are the victims of various disasters, war, famine, displacement, you name it, Christian persecution. They bring with that relief effort the message of the cross. So they're concerned with both body and soul. I had a question before the break about that spirit and body. Well, if we're just spirits, why would we care about the body? Why would we want to take care of it except for just practical concerns? Maybe man is more than just a spirit. Maybe he is both spirit and body. LCMS World Relief knows what man is and knows what man's needs are, both of body and life, but also for the life to come. For more information about LCMS World Relief, find them at our website, issuesetc.org, or donate to LCMS World Relief. Their toll-free number, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. We're hearing some audio from NBC's Mysteries of Faith from this morning with Katie Couric on Scientology. Then we'll talk with Dr. Bob Weiss about end-of-life bioethics issues, and we'll end today's program playing Soundbite of the Week. Your chance to weigh in on which soundbite we have chosen of the five is your favorite, is the best, is the one that you think is the best of the week. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Those side effects can be extremely damaging. Suicide, violence. The FDA has issued, since that interview with Tom Cruise, whenever that was, sometime earlier this year.
This summer.
There has been a number of FDA warnings that have been issued saying that these drugs are suicidal. There was a study that came out, the very drug that Brooke Shields was on, Paxil, a study came out and said that people who are taking Paxil are 7 times more likely to commit suicide as someone who takes a placebo.
Are you pleased that Tom Cruise has become such an outspoken spokesperson for the church?
Pleased. I think it brings a lot of attention to Scientology. I think a lot more people then want to find out what Scientology is. We try and make as much information as we can available. It raises the interest level. People come into the churches, they get books, they find out for themselves. Because actually a fundamental principle of Scientology is you find out for yourself, and what you find and find to be true is what you take out of Scientology.
And why has the church been so litigious when articles have been written or pieces have been done that either criticize the tactics or the approaches? Because it is well known that the Church of Scientology uses very aggressive litigation when the practices are being examined in a journalistic way.
Well, Katie, that really is just not true. There is one case that existed in the United States with respect to that, relating to a Time magazine article back
right.
in 1991 or something
that.
Like that. That case is the only one that I am aware of with respect to the media. The other litigation that the church has been engaged in, and right now there is no litigation in the United States whatsoever. There are no legal cases at all. What cases where people were suing the church, seeking to get money from the church, it just isn't the case.
Well, it's interesting, and we appreciate at least the beginning of this. We didn't get a chance to talk about this meter that raises your negativity or measures your negativity and audits
you. What that meter actually measures is areas of stress or upset, and it literally indicates whether as an area of stress or upset in a person, so that can then be addressed. That's all it does.
All right. Well, Michael Rinder, again, thanks so much for coming by this morning. We could probably have a 3-hour interview
about
this.
I'm sure we could.
Maybe we could do it another time.
Okay.
Thank you, and we'll be back with more of today.
Well, Katie's not planning on joining. That seemed to go a little beyond journalistic interest. I don't know. That was NBC Today's show. They have a special feature. They're running Mysterious Faiths, and today they talked about Scientology with a representative of Scientology. Unprecedented. I don't know that they've ever had a major media interview where they actually talked. He had an e-meter there. These are the kind of things you have to look for. This is like looking for pictures of the sunken ship or something. You just don't find these things around. He had one right there. Now, it's been likened to a lie detector, a very crude lie detector. Now, they use this in their auditing sessions where they hook you up. You talk about your past. Someone watches the little red light blink on this box and says, okay, now there's an area of stress. I wonder what that thing would do if I hooked it up to me this week. I would burn the light bulb out, baby. If you hooked it up to my producer, it would catch fire and then explode, probably. What are you saying there? What's that?
They have a site in far north St. Louis.
They do?
Yeah, they
You think we could get
there.
Them to talk to us?
I wonder if they
we
would.
We should. They've talked to somebody else in the St. Louis market. I know that. Well, we'll see about that. What is Scientology? Scientology is just another human pursuit of what every religion besides Christianity is at its core. It's a religion about you. It's a religion where the answer lies within you. And all you need to know is how. All you need to know is how. Scientology is all about how. In that way, it doesn't differ a lot from the watered down, quote unquote, Christianity of American evangelicalism, where all the sermons are about how. Christianity is not about how. It's about who. Christianity does not tell you that the answer lies within and then tell you how to get it. Christianity says the answer does not lie within. The problem lies within. The answer lies without. In another, in that who, Jesus Christ. And it doesn't tell you how to find him. It tells you that he's found you and suffered for you and died for you. Now, that might to some sound as outlandish as space planes coming to Earth tens of millions of years ago. The advantage of Christianity's claim is it actually did happen. Dr. Bob Weiss is our guest for the remainder of this second hour. He's professor of bioethics at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He joins us to talk about end-of-life bioethics issues. He's going to be making a presentation at the premier bioethics conference of 2005, the Image of God Bioethics Conference, on Friday, November the 11th here in St. Louis. His presentation is titled, The Science and Lexicon of the End of Life. Bob, welcome back.
Thank you. You're getting into areas I'm interested in, too, like panspermia.
Panspermia. Oh, the seeding of...
The seeding of the universe with the universe. Extraterrestrial DNA. You know, Watson and Crick were big big proponents of that.
Watson and Crick of mapping the human genome.
Of the original DNA molecule out of a center of a body cell.
Sure. Why... You're going to make a presentation coming up at this bioethics conference on the lexicon of end-of-life issues. Why are the words we use and the definitions that we attach to those words... Our vocabulary, when it comes to bioethics, end of life or even beginning of life, why are our words so important?
I'll put it in one word, foundational. Where you begin is where you're going to go. For example, if you talk about in end of life issues, extraordinary or extraordinary or, say, essential or non-essential, those things can take on various meanings depending on the context. So the word within the context is going to determine your foundation, and the foundation is going to determine what kind of house you're going to build on it. And so this, of course, is coming out of the biblical, building the house on rock over against sand, so that if we take various terminologies that the American Medical Association are using, like hydration, respiration, and nutrition, and unpack those phrases, those are very general terms. They can mean a lot of different things. Society, most people would say, well, isn't that the same thing as food and water? So if we're giving food and water to an individual, that means this person's life is being sustained by the gift of food and water. When we talk about nutrition and hydration in terms of medicine, we're talking about things that must be added. So according to the American Medical Association, nutrition, hydration, respiration are non-essential items. So if you go with that vocabulary, then you can pull the plug. You can do with them what they want, like with Teresa Schiavo.
Let's talk about Terry Schiavo's. You said you got a picture of her tombstone.
Yes.
And this comes to the whole issue of how we use words.
Yes.
Because Michael Schiavo has inscribed on her tombstone some very interesting language that says a lot about how he viewed her even before he had her dehydrated to death.
Yes.
What does it say on her tombstone?
Basically that she died on February, I believe it was the 25th of 1990, when she passed out and went into this very severe disabling coma. And that's when he has on her tombstone, she died. And then secondarily, he has resting in peace, March 31st, 2005.
That's when she really died.
When she really died. And then there's a picture of a dove. And then the last... Four words, I kept my promise. So he was a practicing Roman Catholic. There's a lot of social intricacies involved with this and medical issues, but Mark Furman has a book out on her life and basically her death, and he is convinced based on that book that she was murdered. And, you know, he's the fellow that was testified against O.J. Simpson. So, but that's his viewpoint as an investigator, police investigator.
He says he wants to say dead when his wife, Terry, or his estranged wife, Terry, is disabled. And it seems as though that was kind of a popular viewpoint about Terry Schindler Schiavo when she was still alive, that she was at least as good as dead, whatever that means.
Yeah, it basically comes out of there's a phrase used for embryos that are going to be destroyed that are frozen called the nothing is lost scenario. And you can destroy them because there's really nothing's lost. You got to do with them some way. They're really not functioning. They're not with the program. They're not alive not dead, but, and so with Teresa Schiavo, it really came down to nothing is lost when the feeding tube and hydrating fluids were removed, because she really died 15 years ago, according to him.
Now, Michael Schiavo considered her hydration and her food to be extraordinary measures, and his whole case was built upon the idea that she didn't want any extraordinary measures to be taken, at least not hooked up to tubes and things like that, even a feeding tube. There's another word for the lexicon. What is really extraordinary measures?
Of course, an extraordinary measure, I'm going to go back to the lexicon of these terminologies. The American Medical Association, again, to repeat myself, says these are non-essential. These extraordinary in medicine means, from what I learned from my brother, who's certified in this area as a physician, these are things we have to write the prescription for, we have to add them to. They're not in the normal care of an individual when they're in the hospital. So that means it's extra and it's ordinary. It's above and beyond the call of duty within the confines of the practice of medicine. Outside of the practice of medicine, we would say, wait a minute, it's very ordinary. Because when God created the human being, I mean, he didn't create knives and forks and spoons and things like that. These are utensils that aid us. They're an extension of our desire to want to take a hold of food, which our hands normally do. So the feeding tube that was inserted into her stomach to feed her really is simply a different format of a fork or a spoon or a knife. It's a delivery system of that which is very ordinary to human life, and that is food and water.
I mean, it would be different. Let's make a distinction if we could. It would be different if, for instance, this were a ventilator. The tube was down her throat. She was intubated, and she had said, I don't want a machine breathing for me. Would
yes.
it be different in that
it
case?
It would be different, because then that would be her wish, and then her wish would be honored if she mm-hmm. were to say, remove it.
It would be considered extraordinary, even though breathing is a normal thing.
Be considered extraordinary, yes. But then again, that would depend on the case. Some people would consider it ordinary as long as it's a useful type of treatment. And not useless. Useless would mean it's serving no purpose. The machine is breathing for the person when, in fact, they are already brain dead, and there is no response to any sort of stimuli.
Well, there's another definition that gets batted back and forth, and that is dead, brain dead. What is death? Michael Schiavo says it's when his wife collapsed.
Yes, when she was unresponsive and had to have all kinds of aids, extraordinary things, according to him, to keep her and sustain her life. Brain death is defined over time from about 1968 to require that both hemispheres of the brain, the left and the right, and the brain stem must be literally what they call isoelectric. In other words, no brain wave patterns can be seen or observed or elicited upon any stimulus. That's the first part. The second part means that you cannot reverse respiration and circulation by giving the patient certain stimuli. So in those two cases where the brainwave patterns are flatlined and respiration and circulation cannot be reversed, then the individual is declared to be brain dead. And so in that case, anything added beyond that would be a useless treatment.
What is this term, futile care? And there's a whole complex, and this is very much in vogue in American hospitals, futile care theory. What are we talking about here?
I have to add a little segue to that. My brother, when he hears that term futile care, he basically laughs. He said any care given to a human being, certainly that is alive, even in the lowest level, say, of brain functioning, like Teresa Schiavo had very little brain function but was alive, he says, how can any care be futile unless the care is determined medically to be, again, a useless intervention. That is, it would serve no purpose to give someone hydration fluids if, in fact, their kidneys are shutting down, or give somebody antibiotics if they are, quote-unquote, brain dead.
Mm-hmm.
So futile care theory means that anything that you do above and beyond the call of duty really will have no benefit on the patient's life in terms of recovery. So if it's not going to help in recovery, let's not do it.
Well, see, this was the whole issue with Terri Schiavo, and that was so many argued, she's not going to get better. And for a while I thought, well, maybe they have a point. And then I realized that's irrelevant. Whether she gets better or not is not relevant as to how we treat her now. And certainly as to whether we feed her or give her water.
Yeah. Since we're dealing on the medical side here a bit more than the theological side, but we can always go back to the love of God in Christ does no harm. It bears, believes, hopes, and believes in all things. It love never fails. So that when we're caring for somebody, palliative care for the people who are terminal, is intensive comfort care. It has nothing to do with, as we say, the ends justify the means in terms of Teresa Schiavo. So that whether she were to recover or not to recover, to make that the determining factor, or whether one is going to treat or not to treat, is blatantly denying the fact that it is, from a Christian viewpoint, not a right, but the Christian witness is to care, and to care always, and never to kill. Killing is not caring. Caring is caring.
I remember having to sort through this as a parish pastor because, and this is something I'm sure that you're familiar with, had the opportunity, really the privilege, of dealing with a number of people in the course of a couple of years who were undergoing hospice care. And hospice is for the terminally ill and for the dying, really. The whole question of morphine came up, Bob, because morphine in proper doses will kill you real fast. But the doses that were given to some of these people, cancer patients, things like that, who were in the last weeks and days of their lives, would have done me in a second. Their body's taking it in. It does depress their breathing. I asked the question at one point of the doctor, the hospice doctor, how is this not killing this person? And he says, this is not killing this person. This person will die in due time. How do we sort that one out? Where, say in the case of morphine in hospice, you're giving pain relief to the point where it may well hasten the hour of death.
Yeah, you're correct. Morphine does suppress respiration, circulation, and pulse, and everything that keeps the person going. This is based on what was developed back in medieval times called the principle of double effect, where the good always outweighs the bad. So the good effect of relieving pain, you don't relieve pain, let's say you manage the pain, always outweighs the bad effect that it could hasten the death of this person by suppressing respiration and heart rate. So it's the intention is to care and not to kill. The intention is to manage the pain and hopefully alleviate the pain, but not to hasten death. So the principle of double effect comes into play, so that when the physician says, look, we have to do this, but in doing so, we will monitor the giving of this drug, knowing that the respiration and the heart rate and so forth will be suppressed, but we'll give so much that will not suppress it to the point of killing. However, if a person's blood pressure, let's say, is very low, for example, say 30 over 20, it may very well hasten the death process, but it is the motive behind the intention that is saying to the physician and to the family, we really have no choice. We have to manage the pain.
So this could, what we're really talking about here is there may be an unintended consequence to our care for this person.
Precisely.
And let's just be honest that we know what that unintended consequence is going to be, but we're going to care and care carefully in this way.
And in the long run, of course, what you've already mentioned earlier on in your program here is that being baptized into the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, even though an unintended consequence may result from the giving of these types of opioids like morphine and other drugs, where in fact they may die, regardless of that end, the hope still is in Christ.
Bob, a lot of Christians believe that the body is just a shell, that the real us is the spirit. And so they are susceptible to the arguments like assisted suicide. Well, if it's just a shell and it's wearing out or it's uncomfortable to be in, why not just leave the shell behind? After all, I'm really a spiritual person. I'm really a spirit. And if the body's just a shell, it doesn't really make any difference. how I go. How do you respond to something like that?
Oh, I mean, that's a, to me, it's not really a $64,000 question. If I'm talking to an unbeliever and they really have no context of understanding what you have talked with regarding Scientology, a body and soul, and this is simply a body, they're dealing this from a standpoint of any number of forms of Darwinian evolution. So when the body dies, that's it, and it's all over with. But to add the spiritual side of this, you know, this is just sort of a carcass in the ground, and it's my spirit that lives on. All one has to do, to me, from my viewpoint, is I point to the resurrection, that it is a body and a soul. It is a unit. And that for a Christian, if for people to say, well, the ground is their last resting place, is incorrect. The last resting place is heaven. So my responsibility as a Christian is to plant the seed and to water it and not to get into a debate with these individuals that seem to think that we're kind of like Casper the Friendly Ghost after we die. There's just no biblical data, no biblical information or revelation of God that supports that.
So the scriptural answer here, in a nutshell, is that we care for the body because we are both body and soul.
We are both body and soul. Luther's morning and evening prayer are quite clear on that.
We're talking with Dr. Bob Weiss about end-of-life bioethical issues. Can you stay with us for a few minutes?
Sure.
On the other side of the break? Dr. Bob Weiss is professor of bioethics at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis, and he's going to be making a presentation at the premier bioethics conference of 2005, the Image of God Bioethics Conference, on Friday, November the 11th here in St. Louis. His presentation is going to be titled The Science and Lexicon of the End of Life. Now, we're going to broadcast live from this Image of God Bioethics Conference. It's Friday, November the 11th at the Westport Lakeside Chalet here in St. Louis. For more information, check out our website, issuesetc.org, or call toll-free 1-888-364-LIFE. This is a new number, haven't given it to you before, but it's great for the information on the Image of God Bioethics Conference, 1-888-364-LIFE. It's the premier bioethics conference of 2005, the Image of God Bioethics Conference, Friday, November the 11th, right here in St. Louis. When we come back, a few more minutes with Dr. Bob Weiss on the end of life and bioethics. Then we're going to play Soundbite of the Week. We've got some Ted Haggard via Tom Brokaw. We have, who else do we have up there, Jeff? We have Ed Meese. We talked to him earlier this week on something that the NARAL pro-choice president had to say. Lots of sound bites, and you vote for which is best after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.